Rob, good morning.
Hello.
Hey. Are you listening on your, are you watching the show on your computer?
I am. I'm trying to turn it off really
quick
here.
If you look right on the right lower corner of the video, there's a speaker. It says more, it has a speaker, and it has the full screen. Do you see it?
Yeah, I'm looking for here.
Click on the speaker and it'll go off.
Yeah, click on the speaker.
Well, I'm clicking on the speaker, but I'm going to lose you guys too.
No, you won't. Not on everything else. If you,
unfortunately, I get everything. Hang on a second.
Look, if you watch,
technical.
Rob, watch. Do you see the phone number in the video?
I do not.
Do you see the video now with the coffee break?
No, I have no video.
What are you looking at?
I'm looking at the Skype page.
No. Minimize Skype.
I am.
And you should be, your browser is open too.
I have no browsers open, believe it or not.
What is the noise in the background?
That's something coming through here. All right, I'm going to disconnect and try back in here.
Tony,
I'm
are you
here? This is Tony. I've been listening to your little dilemma there.
Hi, Tony.
There we go.
What was it?
Yeah, what was that?
There was something streaming in the background that was from one of our sites that was streaming in my background that was coming through for some reason.
Okay.
Still can't figure it out, but hey, that's computers, I guess.
Hey, that's okay. That's fine.
It sounds like my headache in recording studios last night. Always something going wrong.
And right before you called in, we were watching your DPS record collection from YouTube.
Oh, okay.
So we have Tony Bon Jovi, who's a record producer and technology, and we have Rob Roy, who's the VP for Bon Jovi Acoustics. Hey, guys.
Hey, how are you doing?
Both of you guys.
Hello, Armin, Spencer, and Mike. And this is Tony Bon Jovi on this end here.
Hello, Tony.
Good morning.
So, morning. Tell us, first of all, how and why did the idea for the Digital Power Station for iOS originated? Why did you come up with the idea?
The idea came up as a result of me wanting to bring a very high quality sound and make it available to a more general user base or a wide variety of people who normally wouldn't be able to afford that. Now, its origin goes all the way back to the 1970s when I wrote a white paper about the technology, but couldn't build it. And it's only in the last few years that digital technology has given us the ability to be able to take the digital power station concept and be able to make it available to the masses. And the power station came about as a result of the studio in New York City that I built, which is Power Station Studios, where so many famous people recorded and many hit records were made there. And the idea was that we could actually take low-cost playback equipment, and by modifying the program material, we could create a new sound to give the user, the end user, the same experience that we had in the studio.
Okay, now in layman terms for everybody, what does it do and how does it work?
Well, you know, let me jump in here for a second.
Okay.
You know, first of all, the technology, what it does that nobody else does, it is a patented audio technology. It remasters audio in real time. But when Tony was talking about why the DPS, and he wanted to bring good sound to the masses, you know, for your listeners that may not know completely about Tony's background, he's been doing this since day one, you know, bringing better sound to the masses. I mean, this started in the days of Motown. Tony, at 16 years old, figured out that Motown sound. That was the, you know, Motown had this sound that nobody else had that everybody wanted to copy. And at 16 years old, Tony figures it out, calls up Motown, and high and behold, they figured it out. They said, hey, either we hire this kid or he tells everybody. So he was an instant success and commuted back and forth to Motown and engineered and mixed many of the Motown hits in the late 60s. New York wanting to copy this sound, obviously Tony was an instant success there. And, Tony took what he learned in Motown, working with the greats, the Supremes and Smokey Robinson and Stevie Wonder and artists like that. He brought that knowledge to New York, and then redesigned and built some of the famous studios there. Took that knowledge and built his studio, Power Station, which today is one of the most awarded and decorated studios in the history of recording. So he took that Motown sound and brought it to New York, which in turn, let the cat out of the bag. Then over the years, he discovered, brought more great listening to the masses. He discovered and launched the careers of Gloria Gaynor, the Ramones, Talking Heads, and has produced records for everything from Ozzy, Aerosmith, and Bon Jovi, of course. And then Tony being a pilot, Tony wanted quality sound in an airplane, in a high noise environment that required very low weight capabilities. It's not like you could put 1,000 subwoofers and amplifiers in a small private plane. So Tony came up with this concept in the 70s, made it work, and a lot of different cool things that was inspired because of that. And then about 10 years ago, Tony wanted to bring this to the digital world, since digital technology had come forth, and that was the birth of the Digital Power Station, named after Tony's legendary studio, Power Station. The first inception was in automobiles. It was offered in audio upgrades. It's now available in the automotive industry, but we wanted to bring it to computers. I mean, the world is going digital, and everything's coming from the cloud, or I'm calling from Skype today. Funny thing, I was reading, I'm on your email to kind of coordinating this today, and, you were talking about calling in on Skype because it sounds better. Well, what if we can make sound better for everybody, for every computer? I mean, everything's downloaded. The computers are smaller. The speakers are smaller. They're lighter weight. Well, the answer is this, Digital Power Station. It's a patented technology that Tony invented, available. You guys, as your listeners are listening here, they can even go to dpsplugin.com and try it out for free. But it remasters audio in real time for the application. For instance, I'm listening to you guys on Skype, so I'm processing my audio in my ears right now. I can hear back, and I'm wearing these little Logitech headsets, which are very inexpensive, but with the DPS technology, I'm listening to you guys like I'm listening on a $500 pair of headphones. And that's the crux of the DPS technology, which is available for your computers as a downloadable plugin or as an application for your iPhone.
Okay, that's good explanation. Very good.
Yeah,
explanation.
Yeah, I'd like to introduce my agent, Rob Roy. There.
I was
Rob
just going to say,
I do two shows a day here, and Rob is my agent.
Yeah.
He does that better than me. That's why I'm sitting. I'm not going to say anything. No, but everything he said is absolutely correct.
All right. So, what do you have to add to that, Tony?
Nothing.
Okay.
No, there is the idea being, of course, that with computers and earbuds and all these other things, and with the introduction of what the industry calls compressed audio, and the compressed audio is the ability to take a lot of information and to play it back over a short. Put a lot of storage of music or materials or films and things like that. So to do that, we have to chop up the sound so that we could use smaller files. And in doing that, it diminishes some of the original information that was there. So because the technology is active, and one thing that Rob didn't mention is it's active, it's dynamic, meaning that it's constantly scanning the program material and it looks for, let me get just a tiny bit technical, it looks for voltage changes, and it wants to make everything, bring everything up to a certain level. That is what we call the calibration level. So it's active. So when it sees something, it looks for sound. If it sees a piece of sound in the low frequency or the bass area and it's not loud enough, it will pull that up, and it has an operating range of what we call 10 dB. So it's active. It's constantly changing the program material. The same way we do in the studio, we're constantly adjusting the mix to fit a particular playback application. And that's what the digital technology does in real time. And as I said, although the idea has been around for quite some time, it was impractical to be able to implement it. But digital technology, and it's only in the last maybe 6 or 7 years that audio, digital audio, has come onto its own. When with the introduction of digital audio, it was not very impressive, to say the least. And now, of course, it is the mainstay of what we use to not only record, but what we use to playback. And it becomes very cost-effective to deliver to the masses. So that's basically all I wanted to add, was just that little piece there.
Okay, now the sound that comes out of today's handheld devices, can that be improved?
Absolutely.
Yeah. In fact, that's what it. What's interesting about the original evolution of the technology, when I did this in the 1970s and 80s, there were no handheld things. The only handheld device you had was a Sony Walkman. That was it, or a cassette player. And that was the handheld device. So as the digital technology, with the proliferation of the telephones and iPhones and media delivery systems, it's actually perfectly suited for that. And I never thought that it would be applicable to that. But in fact, that's what it's really made for, are the handheld devices and either the speakers incorporated in them or headphones that you would plug in. In fact, we have so much control over the playback environment that we have profiles that you can select. And there are so many profiles or tunings that we name them after cities. So you might say, gee, I like these headphones and I like the Phoenix sound in there. Or I like the Atlanta sound. Or I like the LA sound. And actually they have nothing to do with the cities. We just figured that, we're going to name these. And I think actually Rob came up with that idea. And I thought it was kind of clever. I was listening to something on the airplane the other day, and I was listening to Phoenix. And of course everyone knows by the time I get to Phoenix.
Yeah.
So it's been a pretty impressive implementation of technology that is able to be appreciated by the masses. You don't have to know anything about computers, or you don't have to understand what goes on in the production of the content. All you have to do is know what you like, and we've simplified it down to the point where you can punch up a city or a particular sound, and it's whatever you want to hear. So we're not marrying. Most systems will marry you to a particular tuning or profile. What we're doing is we're so comfortable with what our capabilities are that we're saying, you know what, we're going to recommend this one, but here's 10 or 15 others. See which one you like.
Mike, I know you're
yes.
you're the audio aficionado here, and you,
well,
you care
don't
about
call me
that.
Don't call me that in front of these guys, man. I'm out of my league.
Well,
it's okay. We don't bite too hard.
Do you have any questions about this?
No, I'm listening. I mean, I'm not that ultimately familiar with the technology, but I mean this very respectfully, but comment on how you're not just adding boom and sizzle.
Well, that's a great question. First of all, boom and sizzle, it's just about adding EQ, adding some more bass, adding some more highs. Well, when you're dealing with these small headphones or these small speakers or these compressed files, there's only so much headroom. If you add, bass or treble to the audio, you run out of headroom and it just distorts and frankly sounds like garbage. So what our technology is doing is it's taking the program material, and mind you, whether it's music, rock, rap, hip-hop, country, gospel, whether it's a talk show audio, it's voice, whether it's communication over Skype, whether it's a TV show, a movie, it takes that audio, breaks it down to zero, And when it builds it back up, it understands a couple of things. Our profiles are profiled and tuned for the device. So, for example, your Apple earbuds, they're only capable of so much audio. There's only two little tiny, you know, microscopic speakers in there. You can only put so much in there. So we break it down, but when we build, the DPS builds it back up. The profile, which is the key to what we do, understands the capabilities of those earbuds. So it does a multitude of things. It remasters the audio so it understands what has been lost in, excuse me, in the compression, in the transference from the cloud or the internet to your device. So it restores the harmonics and the frequencies there. But it also understands how those original restored frequencies react to those little earbuds. So it creates a special curve and rebuilds the audio based around the capabilities and, you know, the things that it can't do, what those earbuds aren't capable of doing. The DPS understands that. So it builds it up to compensate for it. So the result is you have, you know, a very inexpensive earbud that when you push the DPS technology and engage it, it now sounds like you have a really expensive set of earphones. Almost sounds like you're sitting in the studio with me and Tony when we mix the record.
Let me give you an even simpler explanation that will make a whole lot of sense. When magnetic recordings first came about in the late 1940s, and as you know, the Germans were the ones to implement that during the war, magnetic tape, of course, was a big change in the ability to have quality and flexibility. Well, back when magnetic tape was introduced, there was only so much sound you can put on it. And with time, engineers developed the capability to put more sound on tape. They had more what we call tracks. It would start out as 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 24, and then digital. What we do that's different than anybody else's, we can identify and recognize not what kind of music you're listening to, but when the recording was made. Here's what's critical about that, and I'll try to explain this in layman's terms to make it simple. Way back when, the bandwidth, or how much sound you could put on a recording, was limited. It was limited by the recording medium and the techniques that were used. But as time went on and the engineers developed multi-track, now you had more control over the program material, so you were able to put more sound on, which means it fills up more bandwidth. More bandwidth is how much sound or frequencies you can get on a playback and recording system. Well, with the advent of digital technology, we went from acoustic recordings to digital recordings. So all the music was computer generated. It recognizes the bandwidth. And when it sees that there's not enough bandwidth, like in the older recordings, it tries to fill up or make those sounds fuller. When it sees a computer-generated recording, and today's computers are used primarily in urban recordings, it'll recognize that there's all this sound there, and it's going to say, well, wait a minute, we're only going to allow but just so much, and apparently when they made this recording, it already does. So it recognizes when the recording was made, and it knows. And the biggest difference it makes is when you play older recordings, and even with the newer ones. So it's active. It looks for sound. And if it doesn't see enough of it, it makes those parts of the recording louder. So what it does is it fills up the sound in the playback device, headphones or speakers. And we program into the technology what kind of playback device you're listening on. That's one of the features that we could do with the flexibility. So it sees that, well, maybe the speaker or the headphone is deficient in the bass area, so it changes the program material to put a little bit more sound to compensate for the mechanical anomalies that are in the initial design of a playback device. That wasn't too complicated, was it? I thought I did that kind of simple.
No, that's good. So that how then does, in concept, how is that different from, say, an OptiMod or an Omnia multiband audio processor?
Here's the difference. What those devices do is they take the sound recording, and they'll add to it. The most common thing to do is to add bass or low frequency. But what they leave out, what they fail to recognize, is that that's a fixed amount of bass that they add. The engineers get together, and they say, this is how much bass the average system should have or a particular application should have, and it's passive. What that means is if they have, I'm going to use bass as an explanation. Let's say the bass, you turn it up on your playback to number 10. And that's what one of those devices do. They change the bass to be make it louder, okay? So, but that works in direct proportion to how much bass is already there. So if it's a lot of bass, it just adds more. If there's not enough, it'll add more. But we don't do that. If we see that there's already enough low frequency coming from the recording, we don't do anything. The technology says, well, wait a minute, I'm getting enough voltage from those group of frequencies, so I don't have to do anything. So it doesn't. However, if it looks at a recording and there's not enough bass, it will automatically raise those frequencies. So we do things in a dynamic sense, not a passive. Every device that's out there is passive in how they work. There are presets that automatically change the sound. And so our technology is dynamic and active. And we're the only one that does that. Plus, the single biggest thing that we do that nobody does is we actually address the program. We change the program material first. We actually modify it. We modify the bass and treble and mid-range characteristics of the program material. And that's all done in real time. And then that signal, we use a lot of conventional technologies to process that. Nobody does that. That's the biggest difference, is that we actually address the program material first. And then we actively change it to fit a particular playback application.
All right. I got several other questions. For example, how do you deal with clipping of the source material?
Well, there's, when you say clipping, let's define that, because when you say clipping, are you talking about where the sound distorts or
digital clipping? You're like a Janet Jackson record.
Right. Okay. That's what happens there is that's a production technique, and that is put on the sound recording for effect. They did that on purpose. When they do clipping like that, the producers and the engineers know exactly what they're doing. They're using that anomaly as an effect, kind of like putting too much blue on a paint. You say, well, why do you need that? They use that as part of the production technique, and that's become a popular thing, is to clip the sound, and it all goes to how they want to present the program material. We can't do anything about that, but bring out the qualities that the clipping originally was trying to do when the producers went in and made that recording. It's analogous to watching a TV show or a movie, and they put what they call a soft lens on there. They put Vaseline on the lens to create this soft effect. Well, a cinematographer will tell you, well, that you're not supposed to do that. That's not as clear a picture. But the director wants to achieve a desired effect. Clipping is now a tool that's used in the production process. Years ago, clipping was something that you wanted to avoid at all costs. But because you have so much control over the amount of clipping that's used in the production of the content, they use it as part of the creative process, just like adding a trash can in place of a bass drum, or playing some piece of wood or glass and saying, well, I want that sound because it creates the desired effect. So clipping is something that is used today to achieve a production statement, and all we can do with that is make sure that that clipping that's on there is presented the way that the producer and the artist wanted it to be presented. So it's not like clipping was years ago, and that's a good question.
Mike, wait a second. Before we go too technical here, let me just ask a few more questions here that for the listeners. Which products are compatible with the plugin?
Well, that's Rob. Rob should answer that.
We have a couple different products. We have a plugin. They're all available at dpsplugin.com, our plugin products, which are for Windows operating system as well as Macintosh. Our Windows plugin is a system-wide plugin. It'll process audio from any source, whether it's Skype that I'm listening on right now, or your Windows Media Player, or iTunes, or your favorite YouTube video, or what have you. The Mac version is available for iTunes and will process any audio within iTunes. Our system-wide version for Mac will be coming out probably this spring. Will be coming out sometime in the beginning of March. We also have an application that you can download into for iPhone users, iPhone, iPad, and iTouch. available at your app store. All you have to do is go to the app store, the Apple app store, and search DPS, as in Digital Power Station, DPS. And it comes up. It's a free download. You can try it out. And Tony talked about some of the different profiles we have. We have a bunch of custom profiles and to remove ads. There is an in-app upgrade so you can kind of maximize your experience. Guys, you know, the one thing is we tend to get really technical on things. We're engineers. That's kind of our occupational hazard. But at the end of the day, everybody understands video, HD video, with the adaptation of flat panel TVs and all LED TVs and such, and that HD picture is, you can't dispute it. It's amazing when you see it. Well, what HD video is to television and video, DPS is to audio. It makes the audio experience that much better. You're hearing everything in perspective the way it was originally heard. It's something we've gravitated away in technology. We're bringing audio back to the user. It's easy. It's a lot of fun. And you can try it. You can try it free with the app, or you can try the plugin for free at dpsplugin.com.
Okay, and as far as, I mean, let me ask Spence here, because Spence, you installed it. The next question is how easy it is to install and how friendly it is when once you installed it. I know you said you've been using it now since we got it.
Yes, actually, it's very friendly, and you can get results immediately after installing without it really having to know much about the software. You just click on the big blue button to turn it on, and even in the default settings, you'll see an improvement. But you can select the output, whether you want to go to headphones, to speakers, and then what I really like is the ability to download specific profiles. For example, if you go to the profile list, you can look, and it has a bunch of different vendors there. Harman Kardon, all the different sound station type stuff that's available, the devices for brand names.
Did you use anything like this before?
Not this friendly, no. Okay. I've used the software that comes with a sound card, and
That's the kind of answer that I was looking for.
Yeah. But it's got, I'm actually using the Skype profile right now because they've got under one of the categories, you got Clarity, Skype, and VoiceOver IP, and you can add that profile.
Matter of fact, that's the profile I'm using right now. Is the Skype profile, because that's what I'm listening to you guys the conversation on right now.
Rob, how far are you from the mic right now?
I am probably about 6 inches from the mic.
Okay,
I've got a question or a viewpoint.
Go ahead, Steve.
I mean, I love music and I love all sorts of audio. I'm into sort of podcasting and things like that. And it's always been my understanding that when you reduce something to an MP3 or you convert it from a WAV file to an MP3, to compress it, you're stripping out information, you're stripping out and removing a big chunk of audio or the audio spectrum. So in theory, then, as far as I understand what you're saying, is that your software actually puts that back.
Well, understand, it doesn't take it out completely. Those frequencies...
Let me answer that real quick.
Sure.
So I'm sorry to... But what happens is this. When you compress an audio file, it's most apparent in the low-frequency range. It doesn't get rid of it completely, but it diminishes it. It turns it down. And because we're active, it's dynamic, it's looking... The technology doesn't know that. It just knows that there's room for more sound, more frequencies, and a particular range of frequencies. So it looks at that diminished sound, and it doesn't know that that's been done. On the one hand, as smart as it is, that's how dumb it is. It doesn't know that someone's changed the mix. That's what happens when you compress it. You change the mix. You change the relationship of the instruments, which are frequencies. So when you do that, because of the way it's programmed, it's going to go looking for that information up to 10 dB. It's like turning the volume up. So if it sees that there's a dip in a particular frequency, that the computer says, the little DPS says, wait a minute, there should be more of that. That doesn't look right. So I'm going to try to pull that back up. So it does not compression does not eliminate those frequencies. It diminishes them. And what we are able to do is go back and pull those frequencies out. And it does that in real time. That's what the dynamic aspect of how the technology works is.
Because the technology is active, as Tony says, this is actually, you know, the idea is to bring all the frequencies to the level in which they were intended by the producers and the artists. But some of the byproducts of these things are that it restores the quality of an MP3. It takes that crispy, crunchy, one-dimensional MP3 and makes it CD quality sounding again. I've used this thing on my, I watch a lot of TV streaming off the internet, and I plug it right into my flat panel TV at home, and I use the DPS to process the sound. And one of the things that I notice is that, you know, when the commercials get extremely loud, and then the actual TV show is low, it remixes all that, so I hear everything. I'm not constantly turning up the volume, down the volume. So these are a lot of the things that come along that are part of the DPS, that just because of the magic of what it is.
Actually, that was one of my questions, Rob, and maybe Tony would be, I don't know who can answer, but is there an automatic level control built in? And if it is it alterable?
No. There's not an automatic level control. Here's how it works. What we do is we look for the loudest possible signal that the program material can generate. How loud is it? Once it sees that, and we have to tell it that, you can't go above a certain 0 dBFS. That's it. Nothing's louder than that. So it looks for that. If it sees that, it doesn't do anything. So when a commercial comes on TV, it's already as loud as it's going to be. It'll modify some of the sound, but it already knows that it's loud enough. It's not an automatic gain control, automatic leveling system, because those systems take everything and make them louder. We don't do that. We take and make things louder by frequency. So when it gets to program material, like a TV show, that's lower in volume, and that's because of dialogue and things like that. It's just going to pull those things up to try to make it as loud as that commercial that just played. So it doesn't bring things down, it brings them up, and it does it by sound, little sound pockets or frequencies. So it's trying to make everything as loud as the loudest possible playback that would occur in a given environment.
And Tony, you've said, go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say, just at the end of the day, it's as simple as this. It creates a much better listening experience. You're getting more volume, more frequency, safer listening conditions while hearing all the program material, hearing every frequency the way it's intended.
And my question, Tony, you said that you keep using real time. What is the real latency?
But there is no latency, and if there is, you would never notice that on a playback of music, and the latency is imperceptible when it comes to movies or TV or anything like that. I have cable TV where I am now, and I'm watching a news show, and the voice is out of sync with the audio. So you know, there's all kinds of issues when it gets to the cable and the uplink and the satellite and the downlink. And by the time you get it, if it's in sync, you're lucky. But there's no latency that you can perceive or realize. It's very, very fast.
The software is very efficient. Even in your mobile devices, part of the latency is one issue, but it's also battery draw. One of the things that our software is so efficient, and it takes up a very relatively small space in your operating system, but it's very efficient. So there's, you know, no detectable latency, no extreme battery draws. It's just an extremely efficient, easy-to-use technology.
I see one of the reviews on your site there says it's an equalizer on steroids. Interesting to give it a go. It sounds very, very, seems quite remarkable.
Well,
what it does.
Understand, though, Steve, that's not really a compliment.
I guess depending on how you look at it, because it's definitely not an equalizer.
What I'm saying.
If you use an equalizer, you'd mentioned, I think it was Spencer had mentioned about clipping. You know, if you add too much EQ to something, then what happens, you have too much signal and it just overloads. This is kind of the opposite of it. But, what they mean, it's the result is something on steroids. That I'll go with.
Sure.
There is some equalization that's used, but not a lot. It's used basically to but trim it out a little bit. The bulk of how it works is the filter system that's in there that's where the patent lies in it. How the initial program material is broken down and how that program material is addressed prior to it getting into any kind of equalizer. Like, we cannot equalize too much because it'll put it over the top. So everything is pretty much automated. And I guess on the one hand you could say it's an equalizer on steroids because, yeah, it's doing something to the sound that an equalizer just can't do all by itself. And I guess on the negative side, they could say it's an equalizer on steroids because it's doing something that an equalizer all by itself cannot do. So I would take that as a compliment in terms of the implementation of the technology in a playback environment.
Okay, thanks.
Before we start winding down here, I want to ask you one more thing. Now, in addition to all the products that you have, Bon Jovi Acoustics also has a global giving program. When did you implement this, and which nonprofits are you affiliated with?
Well, this project is officially implemented, several months ago, and we're actually just getting ready to launch this program. We've got a lot of great charities. We got Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Junior Achievement, Music Unites. There's several of them that can be found on our website. As a matter of fact, users that go and download this plugin and they do a purchase, there's actually an opportunity to donate to these guys and even get a discount on your plugin. But one of the things we wanted to do is we wanted to align ourselves with charities, especially children's charities. It's a sector that's having a difficult time in this economy, and we all came from the music business. We all came from music as kids, and one of the things we really believe in is, you know, music is what got us all where we are today. Tony took me under his wing many, many years ago, and I'm here where I am because of him and what started because of music. And this was kind of our way to effectively give back, all the great things that we've done and achieved and are getting ready to achieve. We always wanted to bring it back. So, some more global giving can be found on our corporate website, which is bonjoviacoustics.com, BONGIOVI acoustics.com. And there's a global giving link on there, too, that tells more about that.
Okay, that's very nice. I would love for you or for your graphics person or whoever to send us a little banner.
Sure.
That we could post for a while on our website so people will be able to go there. And
I can take care of that. And the other thing I'd like to do is, you know, with this technology, and I've been listening to your radio broadcast here all morning, and I listened to it a little bit last week. You guys have a lot of broad conversations and very computer related. The thing about the DPS is hearing is believing. So, I want to invite your listeners to visit our website, dpsplugin.com, where they can try it for free. One of the things I'd like to do is, and I know my publicist is probably going to shoot me because I didn't prep her on this, but I just set up a coupon code for your listeners that can get 50% listening today.
Now, your publicist did say that you guys are giving us four free
correct
packages, and for Windows or Mac, whatever people would want.
That's correct.
So she did do something. If that's what you're
going, they should do is email you guys. The first four people that email you guys will take care of that. However, those that don't make the first four, I have a promo code that I just set up that'll give you 50% off. It's right now. It's introductory price is $14.99, and I just set up a promo code that is good till midnight tonight.
Okay.
This promo code is DPS2KNOW.
Okay.
And use that at the purchase. That'll give you 50% off, which, gives you this plug-in for about, seven and change. I actually just wrote the promo code down. It reads like DPS2KNOW.
Right.
But it's actually DPS2KNOW. And until midnight tonight, that'll give all your listeners 50% off of that.
Thank you. That's great. Okay,
pretty
people,
good.
You hear
thanks
it.
Yeah, see, now I am nine. You're going to have to get the recorded show uploaded very quickly for the people who listen in the afternoon.
I will.
So.
Yeah, now I have to add one thing. As you know, with all of the technology, Rob and I are in two different locations, and I don't have any Skype capability where I am today, but Rob does at his house. I said to Rob this morning, I said, are you going to go on Skype so they could see you while they're talking? And he said, no, I'm not going to do it. You see, Rob is so pretty that it's too early in the morning for him to show his face because he's so pretty that he doesn't want anybody to see him like that. So I said, well, gee, you're going to deprive the listening audience out there and the viewership out there of just how pretty you are. But he refused to do that. I just want you guys to know that he has that capability. I don't, personally. I'm talking to you from a phone because I'm in a hotel in the middle of nowhere. And Rob's got all that stuff, and he refused to go on Skype because he said, I'm too pretty to let them see me like this early in the morning. So I just want you to know that.
He probably just didn't want to diminish your image.
You can't see me. And I got a face for radio, but Rob is pretty, though. You want to see him. My image is strictly on the audio side. I have no visual. Nothing there.
That's going to be my excuse now instead of the one I usually use. Thanks for that.
What did you say, Steve?
See, that's going to be my excuse in future now for not being on webcam.
Yeah,
so Steve
is here. Like he's here every week, and I've never seen his face. I have no idea what Steve's looks like.
Make yourself lucky.
So.
Well, the truth is, I was in the recording studio working with a new band till about 3:30 in the morning last night. So,
wow.
There is some truth to that. This is still an early morning for me, but I'm here, bright and bushy-tailed, and excited to be a part of the team here.
Nice.
So, Rob, I have to ask, what's your favorite vocal mic in the studio?
Oh, you know, that's a really good question. You know, in the studio, we use, you know, the U87s. We got a Telefunken ELAM 251 for all you gearheads out there. But one of my secret favorites that you guys may or may not be aware of, I see, Anman, you're using an EV microphone in your picture there. Looks like an RE20.
Oh, no. In the picture, it's the picture where on the thing is from the radio station.
That's an RE20 that I'm looking at, but... the reason I mention that is there's a broadcast mic that Shure makes. It's an SM7, and that's kind of my secret weapon. I run that through a tube mic pre, one of Tony's Motown EQs that from Motown, and then run that through like an LA3. But the that Shure SM7 for vocals, it's a broadcast mic, but you know, for nice fat in your face vocals, it's definitely one of my go-to secrets. It's not a condenser mic, but being a dynamic mic, it's I use it for snare drums, for guitars, for vocals. You know, it's definitely a great go-to mic that most people wouldn't think to go to.
Tell them what you're using, Mike.
Well, what I'm using now is different. I mean, the mic he's talking about is the same one that Bruce Sweetian used to record Thriller with Michael Jackson.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know,
well,
I know Bruce real well.
He's an amazing vocalist, so whatever he goes on is amazing. It'll sound great.
Yeah.
There are two fun microphones, a Sennheiser 421 and an RCA 44, which is a ribbon mic that was designed and built in the 1930s. But the Sennheiser 421, that's good for just about everything. And I know Bruce very well. Well, I know all the Hump Bones Howell, Larry Levine, and Bill McMeekum, and all the people who made the records from the beginning of recorded sound practically right up until today. And Bruce is still very active, which is highly unusual. And he's a very accomplished and a very, very nice man. If you ever meet him, ever have an occasion to do that. And he's very approachable. But I like the Sennheiser 421. It's good for just about everything. And depending on what we're recording.
You know, you can only get a Mark II now, and I just horse traded an RE20 for an original 421.
Oh, nice.
Let me tell you how far back you go with the 421. They make it. It used to be a white microphone. White
used them on TV all the time.
White, and it had the little roll-off on the back, and then it went to that gray color. And I don't know what they did to it after that, but those are the ones that I've worked with, and we have those, and I don't know what the new ones are like.
Well, you know, the white ones, and this is not too techie for the group, but the white ones are the ones they used to use on Hollywood squares all the time. You'd have this big, fat
yes.
microphone sitting
That's
in
right.
front of the participants on Hollywood squares, and that was the old original MD-421U Sennheiser.
Okay, you know, well, that microphone in New York, that was the favorite for Hammond organ for the Leslie, and for horns, the trombones and things like that. And then the baritone saxophone, they used to use a U-47 for that, but that little 421 is very, and especially on drums, it was really good on tom-toms and things like that. Very versatile. Yeah. And I actually used to go out and use that acoustic filter prior to getting into the console and using electronic roll-off because of that just did such a good job out there on that. But yeah, you know about the white ones, and you're right, it was the original Hollywood Squares microphone.
All right,
guys.
Well, we took a lot of your time, guys.
We enjoyed it thoroughly. I enjoyed this, and our publicist, I have to thank Gail Parento on the air, because if I don't, I'll never hear the end of it. But she did a good job, and she really spoke highly of this show, and she said, Tony, you're going to do this, and I said, okay.
Thank you.
So I really enjoyed you guys. I enjoyed being here, and anytime you want us back, you just let us know, and I'd be happy to come and revisit you, and we could talk about other things. We could spend a whole show on just microphones.
That's Mike would love that.
Yeah, I'm a microphone guy. I used to have a long U-47 long body chrome top, new Vista based version. And since I don't have a recording studio, I decided it was ridiculous having that amount of money sitting here in my bedroom just looking at it every day. So I actually sold it to a producer whom I'm sure you know well, who used it then to record a singer whom I'm sure you know well, who then won a Grammy for that CD. So at least it got put to good use.
Anything?
Well, who was it? Who was she or he?
I don't know if I can tell all that.
Okay. All right.
Anything else that you guys...
Let me say this. I'll tell you who the artist was. I won't tell you who the producer was. The artist was Emmylou Harris.
Oh, that was a Nashville record.
Yes.
Anything else that you guys want to add to that while you're here?
Well, the main thing is just, I'd love to invite your listeners to experience the DPS. iPhone users right now, go to the App Store and search DPS. Computer users, go to dpsplugin.com. Send emails into to your radio show. The first four will get a free plugin. And the rest of you guys, if you make a purchase up until midnight tonight, today being the 22nd of January, you can use promo code DPS2K now and actually get 50% off the price right now. So try it out. It's easy, it's fun, and it's one of those things is once you have it, you don't know what to do without it.
All right. Well, guys, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll be in touch. Maybe we'll do another show.
Okay, thank you very much for having us on the air today, and have a good day, and I know I will here, and hope to see you again real soon. Hope to talk to you again real soon.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks,
thank you.
Care,
thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.